This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
They said we think it's very inappropriate.
Well, what's up, y'all? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here at the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a packed show for y'all today. And without further ado, because this guy's days are now packed every day, I'm really excited to bring on to air with me former Republican Congressman from Illinois, Joe Walsh. Hey, Joe, how you doing? You hanging in there, buddy?
Maggie, I'm all over Wisconsin. I love this state of Wisconsin. It's so good to be with you.
So good to have you in the Badger State, my friend. Let's just jump right in. Cardi, we're going to go to the sound cut of Trump referring to a firing squad in Liz Cheney. We're going to talk a little bit about the context here. Cardi, this is going to be cut number 10. Let's take a listen. We got to come and hang on, Joe.
I don't blame him for sticking with his daughter, but his daughter is a very dumb individual, very dumb. She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face.
So lots of commentary today, Joe, on it. I thought you had a really interesting take on X. My reaction was, he's not actually calling for her execution. The rhetoric, though, is really nasty, which we can just take it at its face value and say that is inappropriate rhetoric. Joe, tell us more about your reaction.
Maggie, my reaction was similar to yours. And again, this is like example number 5,789,236 of all the things he's said that make him utterly unfit to be president. And but he did not say that Liz Cheney should be publicly executed by a firing squad. Here's the way I look at this. Every time Donald Trump opens his mouth, he says bad stuff, horrible stuff, bigoted stuff, dishonest stuff, dangerous stuff. He says bad enough stuff every day that we don't need to lie about what he said. And I know, you know, people think he was calling for her execution. No, he wasn't. Again, just same old, same old. This is who he is. And by the way, Maggie, we're what, 4 or 5 days out? Hello, Wisconsin, everybody. If you're sick of this, oh, I got to watch my language. I forgot. Former talk radio guy. If you're sick of this crap, you've got another candidate who's in Wisconsin today who's talking about bringing this country together. How about that?
Yeah, 100%, Joe. And I think, you know, Vice President Harris has done, my take, a really excellent job monitoring her rhetoric and monitoring the rhetoric of people in her campaign. Again, I've never felt the need to exaggerate what Trump is saying because it's objectively awful and unbefitting any president and any presidential candidate or any party who has nominated a candidate. Let's take a listen. This is an interesting cut, Joe. I think you'll get a kick out of this. Cardi, this is going to be cut number 2. And I thought, you know, there's been all of this hubbub and he's in the garbage truck and he misses the handle and then the firing squad and all of this jazz. And of course, you know, out got trotted all of Trump's sort of apologists on the networks, and one CNN commentator absolutely housed a Trump apologist, and I thought you'd get a kick out of this. Let's take a quick listen.
Well, I also want to make a point that Democrats have been calling him a fascist and other names for a long time. There's plenty of blame to go around.
Republicans, too.
Well, hold on a second.
Fascist,
Republicans too.
A fascist sure. is not a name. Sure. A fascist sure. is ideology. A bunch of things that add up to a way of being. Yeah, they're calling him a fascist because he's behaving like a fascist.
I agree with that.
Because he's talking about poisoning the blood of the nation, and because he's talking about rounding up political enemies, and because he's acting like a demigod, and because he's saying the rules don't apply to me, and because he's saying I'm going to close up the free press, I'm going to close your schools if you don't do what I say. He's acting like a fascist. That's why we're calling him a fascist. He's saying people are scum because he thinks they're scum, not because they are.
Oh, that was a bit of a mic drop. Your reaction. I thought she nailed it. I mean, this is the difference. Your reaction, Joe, and do you consider Donald Trump a fascist or would be fascist?
Yes. Yes, Maggie, I agree with Kamala Harris when she was asked that question on CNN a week ago.
Yes.
Completely. And here's what context is always so important. For the past 9 years, the greatest purveyor of hate in this country is Trump. And there's not a second or a third place. Maggie, you know, Trump believes he can only win if he increases the hate and increases the division. He's trying to scare people into voting for him, plain and simple. And I'm a broken record, but man, again, contrast that with Kamala Harris. And you know, Maggie, I'm not a Democrat, and I disagree with plenty of policy with Kamala Harris. But Kamala Harris, from day one, has been all about, I'm going to be president for all of you. I want a Republican in my cabinet. I want to bring this country together. I love that line she had the other night at the Ellipse when she said, it doesn't have to be this way.
Yes.
All of this chaos and hate and division. And then she paused and she said, it doesn't have to be this way. Trump is who he is. Yes, he is a fascist. Yes, he said he wants to imprison his political opponents and all the rest. But it doesn't have to be this way. And you and me and everybody listening to us right now, Maggie, we got the power to do something about it.
Yeah, and it's the vote. It's been really fascinating, Joe, obviously seeing incredible engagement from the candidates and from voters here in the state of Wisconsin. Everywhere I go right now, I'm seeing get out the vote teams everywhere. Little clusters of folks with their clipboards and their like bright neon T-shirts saying get out the vote. Are you registered? I'm so happy to see that. It's interesting. Something you just said reminded me of a particular question I wanted to ask you, Joe. And that is when you tune in to the conservative talkosphere, whether it's conservative righty-whitey talk radio, the conservative television networks, be it Newsmax, OAN, or Faux News, a.k.a. Fox News, and online, like the Twitterverse, right?
Yep.
What you're hearing from conservative, quote-unquote, pollsters and data wonks is this, like, well, Trump is winning by a landslide. They are just making up crap. And it's interesting to me. I wanted to give you an opportunity to address the fact that the MAGA cult is lying by exponential levels about what polling looks like. And of course, that is a setup. It's the psychological priming of the cult to believe there's no way he can lose, so that when he loses, they are psychologically primed to believe that there was something nefarious that went on other than him just getting his butt kicked. It's pretty scary because people lap this up. They're in their own echo chambers. Like, no actual polling information is getting to these voters. When you look at what we're going to be dealing with over the next week, Joe, what's concerning to you? What psychological priming of the cult is most concerning to you, Joe?
So, Meg, I love the question. And as you know, that's the world I come from, right-wing talk. That was my purview. This is dangerous. And this is un-American. And I worry constantly that America is not ready for the day after. I believe Kamala Harris is going to win. I believe there's a movement afoot of Republicans and independents and Democrats who are going to elect her. But you nailed it. As he did in 2020, and just think, Maggie, think about what I'm saying. I'm talking about a candidate for president. Remember that. A candidate for president is purposely lying to his supporters to cause unrest, chaos, and violence. I mean, think about that. A candidate for president does not want his supporters to believe in the legitimacy of our elections. That's the act of a traitor. But we need to be ready. I guarantee you the Kamala Harris team and campaign knows that Trump will come out that night and declare victory or say it was stolen or do whatever. America needs to wake up to this. And I know the Harris campaign is ready for it, but we all psychologically need to be ready for it.
Yeah, it's the combo of this psychological priming plus the priming that's going on based in fascist, racist rhetoric about this false idea that people who are non-citizens are voting. That's crap. Even the Cato Institute researched it. They can't find any evidence. Go ahead, Joe.
Can I interrupt you?
Of course.
That's why everybody in your great state of Wisconsin listening to us right now needs to vote for her.
Yes.
The bigger her victory, the more it will help dent and push back against all this scary illegitimacy stuff.
Yeah, we're seeing recent reporting. This is insiders from the Harris campaign in a gaggle earlier today saying the campaign's internal data is showing them winning by double digits among battleground state voters who made up their mind in the last week. Joe, do you think this Puerto Rico is a floating island of garbage and I'm going to protect women whether they want me to or not rhetoric is actually having an impact? I mean, for those of us that pay attention, it's like, oh, this is just more of the same. He's been doing this.
No.
Is it different?
No, Maggie, this is different. Let me tell you something, and I know it's anecdotal. That whole Madison Square Garden thing, what was said about Puerto Ricans and other minorities there, that resonated. That has made a difference.
We're going to come right back with Joe Walsh, former Tea Partier, former Republican congressman from Illinois. He used to be a righty-whitey talk radio host. He's now a Kamala Harris supporter. We're going to talk about why Joe thinks the MSG Nazi rally, for lack of a better descriptive term, is making a difference. While Donald Trump telling women he's going to do whatever he wants to do, whether they like it or not, is making a difference. Keep it locked. More with Congressman Joe Walsh when we return here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not.
Children growing, women producing, men go working, some do stealing. Everyone's got to make a living.
Hello.
What up, y'all? Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody, if you're listening, you know that in these last waning days before the election, I have tried to bring you the best guests out there, the best thinkers, the best folks involved in politics, the best academics to help you make your decision, to help you get pumped up, to make sure all of your friends and family are voting and registered and everybody's got a plan to vote. And my guest this half hour is certainly no exception. His name is Joe Walsh. He's a former righty talk radio host, former congressman out of Illinois. He has come out as an ardent anti-Trumper supporting Kamala Harris. Welcome back to the show, Joe. And you've been so busy. I super appreciate you making time. Right before the break, you were talking about the fact that you believe Madison Square Garden, that event, that whatever abomination you want, a descriptor you want to use for it, is making a difference. Why is that? Why do you think? I think Donald Trump's comment yesterday or whatever it was that I'm going to do this even if women don't like it. I think these things might make a dent. Why do you think they're making a difference?
About Puerto Rico and other minorities really struck a chord with average Americans. And Maggie, I'm going to give you an anecdote, but so this past week in Pennsylvania, get this, former President Bill Clinton and I headlined a rally, a unity rally for Kamala Harris. By the way, Maggie, if you'd have told me 12 years ago that I'd be at a damn unity rally for the Democratic nominee with Bill Clinton, I would have told you, you need your head examined. We had a great event. But after that event, Maggie, I had four people separately come up to me. This was a day after Madison Square Garden. Four people came up to me in a crowd of 300 to 400 and said, I wasn't going to vote at all. But wow. After I heard what the ugliness I heard there, I'm now voting and I'm voting for her. Almost the exact same message from four different people. I've heard the same thing from folks on the ground everywhere. That really resonated. That was kind of like, oh, come on, the final straw. Bill Clinton, by the way, who spoke with me at the event, he had the greatest line. He said, we're all Puerto Ricans today. Damn right. We should all be Puerto Ricans on election day.
Well, that which you do to the least of us, you do to all of us, has always Amen. Been my take with the things that Trump says. I also think for younger female voters, they may not have even been familiar with the Access Hollywood clip and the you just do what you want, you grab them by the blah, 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 which is why I'm yeah. playing on my ins and outs, both the grab them by the you know what's and the I'm going to do whatever I want. I don't care if women don't want me to clips, because it's you see the inner workings of Donald Trump's brain in those two clips, right? Like, this is actually what he thinks when he's speaking about women in an unscripted or offhanded way. And I think it's really shocking to a lot of young women voters. Has anybody talked to you? I know this one sort of is very recent. Have people mentioned this to you at all, especially as you've been in and around Wisconsin?
They've begun to, and especially online, I'm getting women feed that to me, outraged about that. Maggie, what's interesting is, in every battleground state I go into, I'm primarily talking to independents and Republicans who are on the fence. And everything you and I are talking about right now gets at one of the things that really bothers them. And that is, if Trump's reelected, it's going to be 4 years of utter chaos. It's going to be 4 years of that mug, that orange mug in front of us on TV every day. And most Americans don't want that. Like, they want to get stuff done. I find that message really resonates with Republicans and independents.
Yeah, we all deserve better than chaos and divisiveness as a governing philosophy. You know, like, even if we can tolerate a bit of that in our politicking and the rhetoric of politics, I don't think Donald Trump fits within those guardrails at all. But even if we would permit, sort of as a democracy, some heightened political rhetoric, we don't want to see that in our governance. We don't want to see division, separation, and chaos in our governance. And what you're saying, Joe, leads me to this place. You know what? I talk to friends of mine who are don't vote all the time, or, you know, engage in a lot of the both-siderism. Oh, all politicians lie. They all that kind of stuff. And they start talking about economics. What I've said to them is, and especially to business leaders, what I ask them is, what is the one thing you need for your business to succeed? And once we get through this Q&A portion, they usually get to this distilled idea that predictability is important for businesses.
Yeah.
If you're a capitalist, you don't want to be in, you know, regulatory upheaval constantly moving, whether you're a preferred company or not. Donald Trump's personal vindictiveness, that ain't good for capitalism. It's not good for our GDP. It's not good for any of those things that I hear more traditional conservatives saying are a motivating factor for him. Do you think the 23 Nobel laureate economists And like the volume of business professionals that are saying this guy is a chaos maker and that's bad for our economy, is that getting through at all?
So I think, Maggie, that's a great point. I think that is actually really getting through. By the way, Mark Cuban, who's been out there advocating for Kamala Harris, has been masterful on this subject, has been masterful on how Kamala Harris will be way better for the business community, especially small businesses. Part of what I've had to do in talking to independents over the last couple months is tell independents that Kamala Harris is not like some crazy lefty, but Kamala Harris has made that job really easy because she's talking about reasonable, common sense solutions, putting everybody at a table. And as you mentioned, all those Nobel economists,
yes.
I mean, the studies have all been done on how Trump's, if you want to call it an economic policy, will add way more to the debt than Kamala Harris's is.
Yeah, and cost middle-class families way more while giving the top 1% to 5% massive tax breaks. Folks, that's Joe Walsh. Get out and vote. You may see Joe out and about in Wisconsin. Thanks you, thank you, Joe, for everything you do. I'll be talking to Joe next.
Love you, Mag. Love you, Mag.
Love you, Congressman Walsh. We're going to talk to Joe next week. Up next, I'm going to be joined by D.C. Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges. He was there on the 6th. You want to hear what he has to say. That's up next on The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the I can do anything.
I'm going to do it whether the women like it
whatever
or not.
Grab him by the I can do anything.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining me. My name is Maggie Dawn, and I am the host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My next guest today is Officer Daniel Hodges of the D.C. Metro Police Department. He's appearing today on The Maggie Dawn Show in his personal capacity. Want to be sure to point that out, folks. He was there on January 6th. He is still an active officer with D.C. Metro. And I know that he has had many a late shift this week as we scheduled your appearance, Daniel. So thank you so much. I know you're probably tired. So seriously, big personal thanks from me to you, Daniel. I really appreciate you being here.
Sure thing, Maggie. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to have you. We spoke for the first time during the DNC, and I know that you have given your account of what occurred on January 6th many times, but given where we are, I'm going to ask you to share with our listeners yet again what you experienced on January 6th, because I find it to be absolutely disqualifying for anyone attempting to run, not just for president of the United States, but for any office that requires taking an oath to our Constitution to either minimize what occurred on January 6th, to brush off the existential threats to your life, the physical assaults that you and your fellow officers suffered on that day, the deaths that occurred as a result of that, and certainly disqualifying to suggest that those who have actually been identified and prosecuted should be pardoned. It is anathema to a democratic system to condone and, again, minimize what occurred on that day. And so, again, your first-person account, Officer Hodges, I think is essential to remind people of what is at stake right now. If you wouldn't mind, sir, to help refresh our recollections of what you personally witnessed and experienced that day.
Sure. I started around 7 o'clock in the morning. I was there all day. I was initially assigned to Constitution Avenue, which is a street that leads to the Ellipse where Trump's rally was being held. I was there all morning watching people stream in, watching people come in with helmets and goggles, radios with earpieces, tactical gear, backpacks full of gear, you know, stuff that you don't really need to watch a politician speak in a park.
They were militarized by all. They were ready for battle.
They appeared to be as such, yes. And later that day, we would find that to be true. But we, so I was standing there on Constitution Avenue. Our assignment at the time was just to be visible, let people know that the police were there. We were there for the duration of the speech. And then afterwards, the crowd shifted directions, started flowing the opposite direction on Constitution Avenue, going towards the U.S. Capitol building.
And this was after the former president's speech and after he asked them to move towards the Capitol. Am I getting that?
That's when the bulk of the crowd definitely went that way.
Understood.
But yeah, they started going that way. And we could hear on the radio, officers who were at the Capitol were gradually getting more and more overwhelmed with violence. The commander we had at the time, we'd been used to hearing him getting, agitated over the radio because we had dealt with the First Amendment assemblies and riots in 2020, but this was different. It was just getting worse and worse. And we didn't have control over the situation and it was getting worse until eventually he called for backup and called for my civil disturbance unit to respond to the Capitol itself. So we got,
and that's the unit
to
you were
vans. We drove down to downtown, put on all our hard gear, the pads that you see in videos.
Yes.
And made our way to the Capitol grounds. And we got to the grounds of the Capitol, made our way to the upper, let's say, northwestern portion of the Capitol grounds, as close as we get on the road. Got out on foot, organized ourselves into two columns, and started making our way towards the West Terrace. The crowd had already gotten there. They had largely encircled the west portion of the Capitol grounds, and we marched through them. When we were further out from the Capitol building itself, the crowd was less dense, and they were content to just yell things at us. They saw us coming and called us oath breakers, traitors, stormtroopers, telling us to remember our oaths. And we pushed on until the crowd became more dense and more aggressive, and eventually they attacked us. They cut us off. They cut us, our formation, in half, so half of us kept going toward the West Terrace. And then the other half was cut off from our leadership and just sort of encircled ourselves and tried to protect ourselves. But we were attacked. Someone hit me in the head with some kind of blunt object. Someone tried to steal my riot baton. And we went to the ground with it. I was wrestling for control over it. He kicked me in the chest. And I was on all fours in the middle of this crowd that had decided I was the enemy, and the medical mask I was wearing at the time got pulled up over my eyes. So I was, you know, alone, sort of, with my colleagues being occupied. I was blind, on all fours and surrounded. I was, you know, completely vulnerable and afraid I was about to get torn apart. And the guy I'm referring to started that. His sentencing was yesterday. I attended in court and gave a victim impact statement. He was sentenced to 37 months. So yeah, the wheels of justice are still turning on people who were arrested that day. But we eventually managed to repel our attackers at that point, and we continued on to the West Terrace proper, where a police line was being held. We fought our way through the crowd some more until we got to the West Terrace, and we joined the line there. We held that line for a while. I was hoping that the crowd there was going to be content to just hold the territory they had already taken. Unfortunately, one of their attempts to break through a line was eventually successful. And once they broke through the line, there was no getting it back because they just poured in through and we were hopelessly outnumbered. I mean, I want to say there was like 150 of us, 200 of us compared to the 10,000 of them. So, you know, there's only so much you can do in that situation. And once they broke through the line, the West Terrace devolved into a series of pitched battles. I was pushed back up against a waist-high wall by a couple people and held there while one of them wrapped his left arm around my head and neck, and then with his right arm reached underneath my helmet and visor and grabbed at my face and tried to gouge out my eye with his thumb. He, you know, got in there pretty good, and you can still, you can hear me on my body worn camera recording screaming while he's doing it. But thankfully I was able to shake him off before any permanent damage was done. And we, with that ground lost, we retreated back to the Capitol building itself. Eventually we went inside, or I went inside the building along with a bunch of other officers. And I regrouped, put on my gas mask because CS gas or tear gas was in the air at that time, affecting everyone there. Put on my gas mask and tried to figure out where to go next, because as a member of MPD, the Capitol isn't really part of our normal assignment. We're the we police the actual city and the residential areas and that sort of thing. Capitol Police has the Capitol, but we were there as backup. So I was in the Capitol. I didn't really know where I was. I had my radio stolen at that point, so I didn't have any comms. I was just looking for work. So I went to, I found myself in the tunnel, the hallway that connects the room known as the crypt inside the Capitol to the West Terrace. And that's just the focal point of a lot of their efforts. Once they took the West Terrace, they tried to force their way into the tunnel. And if they were able to take that, then they'd have largely unfettered access to the whole building. And when we were defending that point, we didn't know that they had actually gained access to the building itself through other means or other points of entry. So we thought, you know, that was it, that we were the last stand. So we were defending it with all we had. I was part of that group. The width of that hallway is like 4 or 5 people wide, but at the time it just felt so much smaller because it was so packed. I made my way to the front of that tunnel and tried my best to rappel them for as long as I could. I braced myself against a metal door frame in the tunnel so that when I pushed forward, I wasn't pushing off the officers behind me. Unfortunately, at that time, the momentum had shifted, and the mob had was gaining ground and had me pinned against the door frame with a stolen police shield. And I was pinned in a way where I was standing straight up. I didn't have any, couldn't make any functional use strength of my legs, and my arms were pinned to my side. I couldn't really use any of my equipment or push off. So I was extremely vulnerable. One of the members of the mob took advantage of my vulnerability and grabbed at my gas mask, started, you know, pushing back and forth on it really hard, effectively punching me in the face, straining my neck, eventually ripped it off my head. And that act loosened my helmet, sort of sat on my head askew, exposing my head. He also was able to rip away my riot baton and struck me in the head with it. After that, I could taste blood in my mouth. I was, you know, getting crushed. I was experiencing all the chemical irritants in the air, the CS gas, the OC spray. And I knew if I stayed in that position and took another blow like that, I could be very seriously injured or killed. And I didn't have the means to defend myself. So at that point, I did the only thing I could and called for help. Fortunately, some officers behind me heard me and were able to create enough space to extricate me from that position. I fell back to the rear, tried to decon as best I could, but the fight wasn't over yet. We needed all the bodies we had available for the fight, so I got myself together and got back out there. I didn't go back in the tunnel because I no longer had a gas mask. I was afraid I wouldn't be any very useful in there. So I went outside and found another police line and held that until reinforcements started to arrive. Once reinforcements started to arrive, I was able to relax a little bit. I went back to the crypt, and where members of my platoon started to gather one by one, and we remained there while our reinforcements were able to take control and support the other officers who were present, where they drove everyone who wasn't supposed to be there out of the Capitol. And we stayed there, I want to say, till around midnight, at which point they said that we could leave the grounds. Those of us who needed immediate medical attention went to area hospitals, and those of us who didn't couldn't go home yet, because even though we had repelled the invaders from the Capitol, they were in the city now, which is our problem. Yes. So we had to go into the city and stand by and see what happened. So we went into the city, took off our gear and laid it on the sidewalk. So the fire department came by and hosed it down to try and get rid of all the chemical irritants that were on it. And we stood by for another hour or two until eventually we could go home. And I went home around 2 o'clock in the morning on the 7th. And that was my day.
Folks, that is D.C. Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges recounting his personal experiences.
I'm sorry, Maggie, I can't hear you.
That is D.C. Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges recounting his...
I can't hear you, Maggie.
Recounting his experiences on January 6th. Daniel will fix that problem in just a minute. He is appearing today in his personal capacity. We're going to take care of some business. We're going to come back with Officer Hodges after these brief messages. I want to ask him a couple of things when we come back, including how does he characterize what happened on the 6th? And what does he say to supporters of Donald Trump who believe and state that they're supporters of law and order? All that when we come back here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the... I can do anything. You can do anything.
So Daniel can't hear me right now?
I can do anything.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour by Officer Daniel Hodges of the D.C. Metro Police Department, appearing in his personal capacity. Thank you. We just heard Officer Hodges recounting his personal experiences on January 6th. Daniel, I wanted to ask you a couple follow-up questions. First of all, thank you. I know that you've had to tell this story so many times. Do you still have effects, physical, mental, whatever they may be, from January 6th, sir?
I was very fortunate in a lot of ways. I don't think I have any physical, permanent physical injuries from that day, but it can sneak up on you emotionally sometimes. I was very emotional in court when I gave my victim impact statement yesterday. So, I mean, it definitely has an effect on you, because it's a very harrowing experience.
Thank you for coming on, you know, so closely after giving that victim impact statement. I really appreciate it. When you hear supporters of Donald Trump say things like they back the blue, what's your reaction?
No, they don't. I didn't see anyone backing the blue on January 6th. I saw them beating me and my colleagues, or at least my colleagues, with flags with a thin blue line on it, and they were completely ignoring our lawful orders and threatening to kill us. So that's not consistent with my experience.
Do you fear another January 6th event? Do you fear supporters of, like, if you have to come face to face with a group of angry protesting Donald Trump supporters, would that, and I don't mean to call you afraid. Of course you're not. You're a freaking hero, Danny. But I think you get my point. Would this cause you to be deeply concerned given what has happened before? And frankly, our former president's failure to do anything for over 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a possibility. Nothing's preventing people from coming to D.C. and mobilizing in force like they did before. But at the same time, I don't think it's likely. I am grateful to our federal partners who are still making arrests to this day. Mm-hmm. For people who attacked us and sacked the Capitol and, you know, tried to prevent the transfer of power. And I think those arrests have a great deterrent effect on people who fantasize about carrying out an attack like that again.
What do you refer to January 6th as? Was it an insurrection? Was it an attempted coup? Were they trying to sack the government? How do you describe it in brief?
I think insurrection is apt. I think it's accurate. I think terrorist attack also fits. When I gave my testimony to the January 6th committee in their first public hearing, I made a point to call it a terrorist attack. And when asked to elaborate on why I did so, I went through all the elements of the crime, so to speak, from the U.S. Code on domestic terrorism. And every single point that qualifies something as domestic terrorism was present on January 6th. So insurrection, terrorist attack, extremely depressing day in American history. You know, take your pick.
Yeah. Daniel, with the time that we've got left, what do you say to folks that are considering voting for Donald Trump as someone who was there on January 6th, as someone who continues to serve and protect as a police officer in one of our nation's largest cities?
Yeah, gosh, it's people who want to vote for Donald Trump. I don't understand, because he's made it clear that he has no respect for our democratic institutions. And if you want to continue to have a voice in how you are governed in your own government, if you want your children to have a voice in their own government when they grow up, then you need to keep people in office who have full intent on preserving our democratic republic institutions. And Donald Trump has proven that he does not respect that. He wants to be a dictator. He said so himself. He's explicitly said that he would suspend the Constitution. And, you know, that's, if you can't have someone who respects our democracy, then all other issues fall by the wayside, because there's nothing else that can be done if you lose your voice in government. That's it. So, I mean, you don't have to love Democrats. It doesn't make you a die-in-the-wool liberal to vote for Harris. And if you don't want to vote for Harris, then don't. But please, please do not vote for Donald Trump.
Folks, that's Daniel Hodges, D.C. Metro Police Officer. He was there on January 6th. He's testified before the J6 committee, and he provided a victim impact statement yesterday in the sentencing of one of the men who tried, for lack of a better phrase, to kill him on January 6th, a supporter of Donald Trump. You said, Daniel, that he was sentenced to 37 months in prison. Do you feel vindicated? What do you feel following his sentencing?
I'm not a vengeful person. You know, it would make it easier sometimes if I was. So I'm not, you know, jumping around and high-fiving people with this news of the sentencing. But I think that it's important that serious sentences are given out, because the crimes committed and what they represent are serious. And we need to make sure that everyone understands that if they try something like that again, that there will be consequences.
If you don't mind sharing very briefly, who are you voting for president?
I've already voted for Kamala Harris.
Thank you. That is Danny Hodges, D.C. Metro Police Officer. He was there on January 6th. Thank you for your heroism, your continuing heroism, and your commitment and honoring of your oath, Daniel. It's a real pleasure. When we come back, it's Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I'll be joined by Michelle Evermore, a former Biden labor official. We'll talk about the new jobs number. All that coming up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Sentimental man or woman to pump me up. Feeling fussy, walking in my Balenciennes, trying to bring out the fabulous. Cause I give a fuck, way too much. I'ma need like 2 shots in my cup. Wanna get up, wanna get down. That's how I feel right now.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.